It's Tuesday, July the 25th, 2017. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good evening, and welcome to another podcast for the month of July 2017. Do not pass out with surprise. I know I haven't been as regular with the podcast or the blogging. Actually, I've really slacked off quite a bit, but I have a number of recordings from yesterday in St. Mary's, Kansas that I'm eager to publish. This was the keynote that I shared, and I titled it Inspiring Student Creativity with Media. And there were about 100 folks that were in attendance. And this was a very, very neat conference that I learned about back in the spring when I attended a Google Summit in Mays, Kansas. And this is called Cavate, the Caw Valley Academy of Technology and Education. I think this is the fourth year that they've had it. The first couple years it was just internal to their own school district, and then they have opened it up for others to come and participate. It's a four-day conference that for teachers just costs $50 for the whole 4 days, or if you want to only go day by day, you can pay $15. So it's really probably the best, you know, value for professional development, but it's, you know, almost entirely teacher-led. There's some, you know, more technical sessions as well, but mostly, you know, teachers sharing ways that they're integrating technology in the classroom. And so I had a chance to participate in basically kind of an EdCamp format session on STEM and STEAM activities at the end of the day. I also attended a wonderful session on social studies resources by a fantastic teacher, and I'll include a few of those tweets in the show notes for this podcast. I'll go ahead and share this. So I was able in the morning to share a couple breakouts, one on iPad activities and the second on classroom radio shows or podcasts. And I'm going to publish both of those breakout sessions on my supplementary podcast channel, which I haven't published on in a while, but you can find that on audio.speedofcreativity.org, and I will try actually to get those published out pretty quick. So I'm very enthused and excited to be heading to Vermont with my wife Shelley this weekend, and we're going to be able to spend several days up there at the Create, Make, and Learn conference, and I'll be facilitating the Making Media strand of the conference and doing some teaching on Monday and Tuesday, and then get to take some classes and be a student on Wednesday and Thursday and stay with our cousins that live up there in Burlington. So, without further ado, I want to encourage you to check out the show notes. Definitely check out the slides. If you want to just go to a shortened link, you can go to wfryer.me/kvate2017, which is K-V-A-T-E 2017, and that will bounce you directly to the Google Slides with all of the referenced resources. So I'm going to edit out the talk time that we had during the keynote, but hopefully this will be of interest and value to you. And if it is, I would love to hear from you either with a comment on the podcast post on speedofcreativity.org, or you can always reach out to me on Twitter at WFryer. So now, without further ado, it is back to St. Mary's, Kansas, which is about 30 minutes just east of Manhattan on Highway 24. And this was the Cavate Conference, kicking things off in the morning on Monday, July 24th, 2017. Good morning. Are we live?
Nope.
So, I don't think so. Am I on? I shouldn't need it. It becomes this macho thing sometimes, or it's not always for women, but guys, I don't need the microphone. We'll try for the microphone if we can have it. I'm very thankful for the chance to be here with you all. I did graduate from Manhattan High. I'll just date myself right off the bat in 88. And so I promptly left for the Air Force Academy at age 17, never to return for more than a week or so. But I love Manhattan, and, you know, I bled purple before we'd been to any bowl games before, and used to split a season ticket with my cousin, and now we just make an annual pilgrimage for Labor Day and usually one other game. But we're not going to talk about it. Gosh darn it. That was loud. Thank you. So that felt a little bit like touching an electric fence. I'm the dad of two teens, one that turned 17 and one that will turn 14 in September. And I will not talk a lot about this, but yeah, I feel like I've touched an electric fence a little bit as their father with social media and dating and, you know. Anyway, there we go. Hopefully it won't be that loud again. If you would like to have any of the links that I'm going to share today, you can find it by going to a shortened web link, so W. Fryer, which is my Twitter ID, but wfryer.me/kbate2017, or if you go to Twitter, I have that as my pinned tweet at the top of my tweets, and I will have that up again later if you want to scan this with a QR code, because there'll be a bunch of different links that I'm going to share with you. I had a chance, as Teresa mentioned, my folks are in Kansas, and so this is a wonderful opportunity. It's a catalyst for me to be here with my folks. And my wife's parents and mine were all born in 1940, okay? So we're at a stage of life where I'm just taking everything, trying not to take anything for granted. You know, every minute, you know, it's really a good thing. My father and I, at the end of June, had a chance to go on a Kansas honor flight. And so Kansas, awesome state that we are, if I can say we, I'm from Oklahoma now, I'm a child of the Chisholm Trail, okay? The Air Force sent me to Texas. I lived there a long time. Now I live in Oklahoma. Whatever. Oklahoma stopped doing honor flights after all the World War II veterans went. And if you're not familiar with that, that's a special flight that goes to Washington, D.C. and takes the veterans to the memorials on the Mall. And so Kansas has not only done all the World War II veterans. There were 3 Korean War veterans, and then there were about 36 Vietnam veterans, including my dad, and I was his escort. So anyway, yay Kansas, awesome state, and you all are doing fantastic things, right? Does anybody have to be here today? Is anybody like you were held up against the wall and said, you will come? Okay, that's kind of cool too, right? Because we're here to learn, and we're here to share, and we're here to collaborate, and I gotta tell you, that is the sweet place to be as a learner, is connected to other people. Because we've got about 30 minutes this morning for us to talk, me to do most of the talking, but for us to be here and collaborate. But we've got a lifetime to be connected and to be able to learn from each other. And it is amazing. Like, this is the most exciting time in history to ever be a learner. It's also very disruptive. And there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of other things going on. We'll talk about some of those things. But I want you to start this morning by turning to your neighbor. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. The answer for me, this question was fireman. What I want to be, I want to be a fireman. So when my parents took us to different towns, I always had to visit the fire station. I got to ride up in the snorkel, I think, one time. It was so cool. I wanted to be a fireman. Little did I know that would mean technology director, and I put out technology fires all the time, just not with a water hose. But turn to your neighbor, and I want you to tell him, what was one of the things that you remember saying as a young person you wanted to be when you grew up? All right, you have 30 seconds. Go. Okay. What were some of the answers? Answers from the front were?
Teacher.
Teacher. How many said teacher? All right. Who said something other than teacher?
Astronaut.
Actress.
Veterinarian.
Anybody else? Who had something that was kind of, yes?
Zoologist.
That's great. The minister at First Methodist, where my parents go, was talking about this on Sunday, and he said, you know, you ask 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds, but one girl said, giraffe, you know, she stuck with her answer. Mommy, you said I could be anything I want. I'm going to be a giraffe. On a little quick tech note, you notice what I've done with this slide? When you present content to students, I'm going to encourage you to use media. All right. This comes from a website called Photos for Class.
which gets openly licensed images. And I think I put in Fireman Kid, and I got this cool picture. So it's been shared openly. But a lot of times when we present content, and we see content presented, we will see people abuse PowerPoint. Have you ever seen that before? I'm going to try not to do that today. But I worked for AT&T for 2 years. That's why I moved to Oklahoma. And oh my gosh, we had to watch all these slide decks, text, text, text. And it really, I mean, it served a different purpose. When you are presenting content and you want somebody to connect with an idea, right, use a visual and minimal text. And I'm going to encourage you today to have your students make this shift to be creators of media, not just consumers of media. Because when you need to start thinking about, what's my idea? What do I want my audience to connect with? Is there a story that might connect with that? Right? Because how long have we been telling stories to each other? Since the cave, right? Forever? All of these things go into learning and can help the message that we have be more impactful. Well, back in April, I had a chance to be in California in Burbank, and I heard Jamie Cassop speak. Jamie is the lead evangelist for Google. Anybody using Google tools? Anybody using Google Drive, Google Apps? Anybody using a Chromebook? Okay. Anybody using an iPad? Any iPad users out there? All right. So I'm happening to use my Mac today, but I have those things that we use. And we use all those at our school. You know, we've got about 250 Chromebooks. Our school is about 900 kids, about 170 teachers and staff. We've got about 250 Chromebooks. We've got about 120 iPads. We have a mix. We've got Windows machines in a couple labs. Here's what Jamie said, and I'm giving him credit to shout out. He said, instead of just asking kids what they want to be when they grow up, let's ask them what problem they want to solve. Why is that a better question? How many of us have heard that the job is the future? Many of them haven't been invented yet. Does anybody know somebody in Cloud County Community College doing something with windmills as far as like lubrication, repair, and maintenance? Do you know about this? I was hearing yesterday that there's a backlog for that job, right? 10 years ago, was that a big job in Kansas? Probably not. One of my best friends that I went to sixth grade through 12th grade with, his dad is a farmer. They have land up in north central Kansas. He just signed a contract that's a 90-year contract. It's actually 50 years with an option to extend 20 and 20. So 90 years for this Florida company that's putting windmills on their property. And, you know, I think they're putting a pretty big bet on that, right? The world is changing. And there's a lot of dynamic things that are happening, but I like this idea that instead of just saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because maybe you said teacher, and that's what you said when you were 3 or 4, and that's what you've become, and that's what you are. And I feel like I'm still a teacher, okay? I was back in the classroom after I finished my doctorate for 2 years in 2013 and 2015. Teaching STEM, science, technology, engineering, math to 4th and 5th graders. I think every PhD in education should go back in the classroom for 2 years or for more, or for longer, stay there forever. But we're 50th in the nation in teacher salaries now. So with kids in college, I had to look at options. But my point is, probably most of the kids that graduate are not going to be doing the same job their entire life. It's probably going to change. And so if we raise up a generation of problem solvers, we're going to equip them well for the future. Now, please do not think I'm doing this as a big dig on Catholic education, all right? The only time I went to private school growing up was in 4th and 5th grade. We lived in Columbus, Mississippi. My dad was a student squadron commander at Columbus Air Force Base. And for one semester, I went to a Catholic private school, and then I went to this other small school. And I did have some interesting experience with the nuns. I'm not going to tell you all those, but, you know, there were rulers involved and, you know, things happen. If you're going to ask Wes Fryer this question today, Wes, what do you want to solve? What problem do you want to solve? This would be one of my answers. I want to help figure out how we can make learning in school more engaging, more positively memorable, because I can make it memorable really quick, right? I don't know. I mean, there's different ways that we can make things memorable. It's not necessarily positive. I mean, and also transformatively empowering. Unfortunately, and I don't know if this is true in St. Mary's, but in Oklahoma City and in Edmond, where we live and we moved there and we still go to church, Some people in our community really think that, you know what our schools need? We need to paddle kids again. If we could paddle kids again and we could make them pray, we would solve these problems, right? Let me tell you, I'm actually at a school where the kids have to go to chapel every day and they're supposed to be praying. It doesn't solve all your problems, okay? And beating children is really not the message that we want to be sending out. You know, there's lots of research on that, and, you know, different things help different kids learn and be motivated. But that is not the answer. You are the answer. Teachers who are passionate about learning and are passionate about sharing are the answer. And so hopefully some of the ideas I'm going to share today will answer this question in a better way than this woman with a ruler would. So my contention today is that we can inspire kids' creativity with media. And so there's a website I've worked on for about 4 years now called Show With Media. In fact, if you take nothing else away from today, please take this link and look at these different products. Because whether you are using Chromebooks with students, whether you're using iPads, whether you're taking kids to the computer lab, or you don't have anything. Your kids have a phone, you know, but they don't have a device. Your students can be creating different kinds of media to show what they know, to demonstrate their knowledge. So I want to start out, if we've got the audio on the laptop, with my favorite example from those 2 years back in the classroom, 2013-15, teaching fourth and fifth grade STEM. In Yukon, Oklahoma, STEM is a mandatory class for every fourth and fifth grader. All right, just like music, PE, and art, every kid goes to STEM. And one of the highest compliments that I think the program had while I was there was that I had some fifth grade boys who liked STEM more than PE, okay? And if you can get kids to do that, fifth grade boys at that age, that's pretty good. All right, so we were doing a unit on the science of music and sound. All right, we were creating music, we were studying sound. I found the teacher that had the FOSS kit, right, with the tuning forks, and we were using tuning forks and talking about vibration. And so these are three of my special friends. They were fourth graders. And they had been at the center where they were trying to figure out the string foam, right? This is two cups with a string that's tight in between, and they're trying to talk in between. And their task was to talk about how the string foam works, okay? Now, as you listen to this, I want you to be thinking about, why would this be Wes's favorite example, okay? From 2 years of kids creating media, why this one? And this is just an audio.
Hello, guys. Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode. This time, you can hear me. This is Dr. Fryer's class, and we're with Andrew, Madison, and Evan.
Take 30 seconds, talk to your neighbor. What was good about that? Why do you think that might be exceptional in the eyes of the teacher? Okay, go, talk. All right, if we wanted to take a little bit more time with this, and I'll be talking about some of this. It's called an iPad activity session, but in room two, the session I'm doing right after this, it's just activities. And so doing a collaborative document where every single group who just talked could share what you said would be awesome, right? Because I am going to barely have time to hear two or three people share right now. So we could model that and have, does anybody do that as a collaborative document? You can do that with a Google document. You can do that with a Padlet, P-A-D-L-E-T, if you haven't used a Padlet. You can also do that with something like Today's Meat, todaysmeat.com. But we'll be verbal. We're going to be old school. What was something that you said or your neighbor said? Because you can volunteer your neighbor right now and say, yeah, she needs to talk. Why do you think this was exceptional in my eyes as the teacher?
They were excited,
okay, and then that excitement came through, and they were excited to express themselves, right, which is not always the case. Okay, what else? Oh, they all participated. Thank you so much. They all participated. All three of those kiddos in that center were talking and participating. Now, some of them were like passing the buck, right? Hit it, Evan. You know, we've talked about the birthday stuff, you know. They all participated. What else? It was student driven. In fact, as a teacher, I can tell you this, like, I kind of wanted them to do, they had learned how to audio record at centers, but in this one, I don't remember what it was. There was another way I wanted them to show their learning. They self-selected this. They love this. I don't know if you heard at the very beginning, they said, and this is the same day we showed you about the such and such. Like, they had this sense of audience. So they self-selected it. They liked it. Welcome back. Welcome back to our show. Anything else? Well, one thing that you don't know that I do as the teacher is that if I had asked these kiddos to give me a paragraph on this and to write this down, I would not have gotten it in 20 minutes. All right, we were rotating through centers. Boy, this is a clear example to me of how important it is to give students choices about the ways they express themselves. One of the best things that media can do is it can be a window into the mind of your students. What's going on up there? What are they thinking about? What have they learned? What are they wondering? What are they questioning? And so, I think it's really valuable and positive to talk about examples of student work. One of the things this summer that I started to do was use a website called Badge List. Okay, badgelist.com. It's free. And as Teresa mentioned, I've led iPad media camps now for several years. This was the fifth summer. And we created badges, my wife and I, for each of the products that teachers were creating. What we just saw was a narrated image. All right? It was a picture that we put audio with. And so something as basic as this, not video, it's not edited in a big way, it can be transformative because it can let me learn things as a teacher that I might not have learned otherwise. It can let students express themselves in ways they may not have been able to do if I just limited them to the traditional paper and pencil tools. So, takeaways. Here are a few things. This is like the most text on any of my slides. First off, I think we need to give students choices about how they express themselves. Media can open a wider window into their minds. Keep it simple. It doesn't have to be complicated, right? It's actually very easy to get media and technology complicated. Sometimes very simple things can be very powerful. And how about this? Let's ask students good questions and provide opportunities for them to explore, to discover, and collaborate. Because I may think you're learning when I'm telling you something, but guess what? You're really not. Okay, John Dewey says we're going to learn from experience and from reflecting on our experience. So when we give kids chances to interact, collaborate, build stuff, make things, design, create, and then they reflect on that, that's really a sweet spot for learning. The best things with audio come at the end. We don't have time, but I could play you some other examples, family examples too, that are just priceless, but the best little part comes at the end. Alright? It's just something I've noticed when kids are using media. So I just say, you know, hang on, because sometimes you gotta get through talking about the birthday and talking about, you know, other stuff before you get to the meat. And that meat can be really good because they got it, right? They got it together. Now they had disagreement and they were working on it together, but some of them were understanding vibration is a part of sound, it's how it travels and propagates, and that's why a sound phone works. So, what is in your digital media kit? All right, today, if I hand you a classroom set of iPads or a classroom set of Chromebooks, and here's your content, this is what you're going to teach, what could you create? What could your kids create? I want to encourage you to expand that media kit, right? Every one of us has had different experiences with technology. Who's taken an online class? Well, like graduate or college or whatever, you've taken an online class. Who had a good experience with their online class? Who had a bad experience? Okay. It really varies, right? Just because I say online class, it doesn't mean it was magically great. It can be phenomenal, right? Here in St. Mary's, Kansas, you can take an online class just like somebody in New York City, Los Angeles, you know, Dallas, whatever. We've had different experiences. So my encouragement is, try not to be overwhelmed because there's so much, and pick a couple things that are media products that you can make and that you can learn to make and that your students can make as well. So, my remote control is not cooperating. I want to do a quick magic trick. It's not magic really, it's technology. And then I want to talk about some tools, right? Technology has changed so fast that a lot of people do think it seems magical. And actually, this one isn't as magical as the next one, but are you guys doing school on the 21st, on August 21st? Yeah, we are too. I was just talking to my mom, like, shoot, maybe we ought to provide some glasses for some classes that are going to go out to try to watch the eclipse or whatever, because it can be dangerous. This is an app that space.com has done called Eclipse Safari to give us updates about the eclipse and what's going on. I didn't put this link in here, but Google is teaming up with people all over the world, or the United States, to try to recreate the eclipse and to crowdsource it. Now, photos that are going to recreate the whole thing. I will drop that link in as well. I just remembered that and didn't have time. But here's my little magic trick, okay? Who's heard of artificial intelligence? Okay? Does anybody have this app already, Seeing AI? Okay? It just came out, like on July 19th. Okay? And if you want to download this app, you can do this little demo. What I'm going to do is I've got my iPhone on your Wi-Fi. Your Wi-Fi network is friendly to AirPlay. Yay. And I'm running a little $7 piece of software called Air Server. Okay? Air Server makes my laptop into an Apple TV. Alright, here we are. Seeing AI. This is in beta. You can scan different things. So if I wanted to look at a short bit of text,
Iowa University.
Okay, it's going to just start reading something to me, all right? It just scanned it, and it's starting to read it. I can do things with documents and text, but here's probably the most fun. Teresa, will you let me scan you? See, I didn't set her up for this. I'm not going to share this.
Processing. 53-year-old woman with long hair.
Okay. The darkness is increasing the age. So, Carrie, can we go for it? Okay, here we go. Oh, you turned 4. Oh, it's 13 years.
It's all downhill from there, right?
All right, let's try again.
Processing. 73.
All right, clearly artificial intelligence technology has a way to go, right? It's not there yet. But this stuff is coming, and this stuff has implications for us beyond a trick, all right? I don't know if you saw Ghost in the Shell. I think it's like rated R, so I'm not saying, you know. But, I mean, these movies that are projecting the future, artificial intelligence, a lot of them are really negative and dystopian, right? It's not like the Jetsons. Woohoo! It's all happy, and Rosie's doing the dishes, and, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a surveillance state and there's a camera everywhere. In fact, I was pointing out to my mom all the cameras in Manhattan around Aggieville and stuff, and we've got these too. I've heard London for a few years, you can't walk outside in London, England and not be on camera. Okay, and you've probably seen the Tom Cruise movies and stuff where like it's all CIA and there's the cameras, and so like the camera's on Dina and it says, ooh, she's on the watch list, you know, and we know she's this age and she lives here, da da da. Okay, so there's scary stuff that's happening here, but there's also stuff that has implications for us, all right? And one of the things that's happening, and I'm going to try not to talk for too long about this, but companies like Microsoft, Apple, Google, Amazon, They're in a big fight to work out AI technology. And there's a big fight going on between Amazon and Walmart, right? I don't think in Marysville, Kansas, you've got Walmart pickup, but can you do that in Manhattan yet? Or Topeka? Has anybody done that? You order it online, you just go pick it up? I mean, who's checked out in the checkout line, right? Yourself. There hasn't been a checker. Automation has been affecting farming big time. I drove into Marysville and you've got the sign outside. I remember when it was less than 50, one Kansas farmer feeds blank people. Anybody know what that sign says today, right outside town? 128, I think. Automation has been happening for a long time. There's a lot of aspects of this, okay? I'm not going to play the video. There's a 60-second, 90-second video where Microsoft talks about the things that this app can do. Why is that a big deal? Well, who's using Siri today? Okay, does anybody have an Alexa or an Echo or an Echo Dot? Right? Because you can say things like, I guess, order toilet paper, and it will, right? Or you can say, hey, can you play some classical music for me? You know, and from the Amazon digital library, you know, you just get random. I want to hear some Beethoven. I'm sure there's lots of our kids doing that right now, but, you know, they could say, let me hear the Lord's latest hit, you know? Let me hear whoever their favorite musical artist is. Anybody have a Google Home? Yeah, I don't have one of these yet. There's a little bit of creepiness to it, right? Is the microphone on all the time? There was a court case in the last 6 months where the police subpoenaed the Alexa record because they said, wait a minute, there was a murder that happened in this house and Alexa might have been recording at all times, so we want to subpoena that. And the court initially has said, no, that you don't have probable cause. And I think Amazon's probably happy about that because they don't want, I mean, sales would probably go down if, you know, it was recording all the time and police could subpoena that. I'm not going to click on this, but you can go into the Google Home and find out all the things you can learn, right? Do you remember debates in school about calculators? Is that still contentious, by the way, sometimes? Do you get to use a calculator? When do kids get to start using calculators here? What grade? They learn on them in grade school? Yeah. ACT, do they get to use a calculator? Depends on the kind, I think, right? But they do. So these kinds of tools, we're now growing into an era where we're going to have access to this huge body of information. And we're going to be able to access it not just by typing, but also by putting in, by talking, by saying, it's like my wife is a Star Trek fan. Computer, what's the temperature today in Manhattan? I mean, can Siri do that today? Yeah. 2 days ago it was 107. I'm like, this thing is broken. It can't be that hot. But here's some things that are coming. I don't know if you've read about this, and this has implications for us. Kansas, Oklahoma, lots of states. Well, I guess I went too fast. This is September 2016, LA Times. Robots could replace 1.7 American truckers in the next decade. This is a 2014 map showing the most common job by state. What is it for both Kansas and Oklahoma? It's truck driver. Okay? This looks bizarre. This is from July 5th, 2017 on The Verge. This self-driving truck has no room for human driver, literally. I don't know. I've been to conferences for years, heard people talk about the future, and they talk about these fancy implants and things that are happening, and some of this is still science fiction, but there's science fiction that's real today. And this should have some implications for what we're doing. I'm a big Tesla fan, right? I think Elon Musk, he's not that great on the perhaps social front for families and a model kind of like Steve Jobs. Like, I don't want to be them socially. But he's really disrupting things. And the new Tesla, which is, I think, in the mid-30s, which is a lot cheaper than the $70,000, $120,000 cars they had. Every single Tesla rolling off the production line now has full self-driving hardware. And I mentioned In the Shell or these Tom Cruise CIA movies, you know, that show all this technology. Watch this movie, okay? This video is incredible. All the cameras that are scanning, everything that they're identifying, all the information they're bringing in. And guess what? They only really need to prove one big thing to make self-driving cars a reality. And that's that they are safer than human beings. Because how many people die on the road every year from car accidents? The number one thing, Dina says, number one killer for kids under 18 is automobile accidents. So, these things are changing. If you'd like to hear me talk more about this, I do a show with my friend Jason in Montana pretty much every Wednesday night on YouTube Live. We're at 9 p.m. on Wednesdays, and we have an audio podcast of that, and we broadcast it live. We call it the EdTech Situation Room. I already did the little demo there, okay? That's a magic trick. But we need to move beyond magic tricks and think about how should our teaching adapt? What should we be doing with this technology? And to prepare kids, right? I want to prepare kids to be successful in life, not just to have a job, but to have the skills they're going to need to navigate all the temptations and all of the, you know, possibilities. Who sent kids to college? Have you sent kids to college yourself? My son, our son, you know, is going back for a second year, okay? And he had a good experience and he's going back. You know, but I've got plenty of friends whose kids didn't have a great experience their first year, right? It's a world of incredible choice, right? No matter where you go, the kinds of choices that you have are unprecedented. Just go to the local Quick Stop and see how many drink choices there are. There's a world of choices, some of which make a big difference and some don't. So I'm going to argue that students need to create and share, not just simply listen, consume, and regurgitate. And this was true before technology and AI, but I mean it's really clear, right? Don't just have me memorize the states and capitals. Alright? That is not going to adequately prepare me for this world of change. I think we need to emphasize creativity and something called computational thinking, which is figuring out how do I solve that problem? How do I get this, you know, how do I get this program to do something, to solve a problem, to get me an answer? We need to communicate across the curriculum, and we need to both problem solve, collaborate, and use design thinking. So, I'm just going to briefly give you a plug on why two of these would be awesome to do. InfoPic and green screen. And I may not actually have time to show you the green screen, but maybe I do. I'm going to show you part of it. Okay, who's done a green screen video before with kids? Alright, this used to be, and it still is, pretty magical, but it used to be really, really hard, and now it's getting a lot easier. I'm not gonna play this whole thing, but this is from my wife's third and fourth grade classroom 2 years ago. Alright, for the last 4 years, she has taught at Positive Tomorrows, a school for homeless children in Oklahoma City. So every single one of her kiddos is homeless, every family, it's been very challenging. But, it's amazing what, you know, kids have different challenges, but kids are kids, and the opportunity that we can give kids to express themselves, to develop their own literacy, and to communicate, it can knock your socks off. This is my favorite project of all the projects her kids did in 4 years, and I'm just going to play a little bit of this. This is a shortened version. This is in their classroom, okay, with a green screen, and they did this during Black History Month last year. Messages there. And especially if you know a little of the backstory of some of those kids, it's even more powerful. So green screen video, these are things we can help our kids do. Our kids need to learn how to communicate. They need to learn how to verbally get their ideas together, fluently express them. And there's a lot of different projects and a lot of ways we can do that. And so in a project where they're planning what they're going to say and they have maybe some photos and they record, you know, green screen can be a part of some really compelling projects that can be wow work, all right? We're not going to do this brainstorm because I'm going to finish in 4 minutes. But I like this term wow work, okay? And if we had more time, I'd have you talk to your neighbor. What was wow about that project, about what those kids said and talked about? The last little tool I'm going to try to give you for your digital Swiss Army knife, all right, is an info pic, all right? Who has made an info pic? You've taken a picture and you've put text with it. Has anybody else made those? A couple people have. Every single one of us, whether you're teaching pre-K, K, or you're teaching 11th grade, 12th grade, or maybe you're a college professor, you can use InfoPics. Your students can create InfoPics. You can do this as a class. You can do this individually. And so on the Show with Media site, there's a link for InfoPics. And I'm just going to quickly give you 5 of 10 what I think are good reasons why InfoPics should be a part of everybody's toolkit. All right? Reason number one, it's fun. Does anybody want to have fun today? Woohoo, I do. And your kids do too, right? Your students do as well. We can't have fun with everything. But when you're figuring out, okay, what's my message? What do I want to try to communicate? And then what's a picture that I can use that will allow me to, you know, connect with you and tell that story? That can be engaging and fun. It can be challenging and really get you thinking and have time on task, right? There's a reason. I didn't have to get a doctorate, I guess, to learn this, but do you know there's research that shows the longer kids work with content, the more they learn it? Duh. Right? But you know, when students are making a media project, it can sometimes take them a lot of time, and they can get derailed and spend all their time searching for a picture. But they can also spend more time thinking about what we're trying to get them to learn. And if they spend more time working on their project, chances are they're going to be learning more, okay? Somehow my remote doesn't like me to go over here. Who speaks another language? ¿Hay personas aquí que pueden entender español? ¿Hay estudiantes aquí que hablan español? Do you guys have Spanish-speaking students here?
No.
Nope? Some? Okay, depends on where you're at. Well, we have over half the kids in Oklahoma City now speaking Spanish. We have Vietnamese and lots of different. It depends where you are, okay? But I say that. Who speaks a second language? It's hard for me to translate into Spanish, especially things that I haven't said before, you know? I mean, it's a challenge. How about translating it into pictures? Does this happen to you every day? Do you see people trying to get you to do something who are using a picture instead of using words? Every time you go to the store, I go to the store. Every time we go to the checkout line, how important is it for us to let our young women know that every single woman you see on the cover of those magazines in the checkout line does not look like that? That's huge for body image, for identity. There's different reasons why this is important, but it's challenging, and intentionally asking kids to connect words to images is a good thing. Synthesis, right? Bloom's taxonomy. What happens is we move up Bloom's taxonomy. We have knowledge and comprehension stuff, learn the facts, and then we ask you to do what? Higher order thinking. Synthesize. Bring stuff together. Make connections. And so when you're trying, by the way, this was version one of that. There's too much text on that. Here's my second attempt. All right? This literally happened in our legislature at the budget. We're so undemocratic in my state. It's crazy. Why don't you send some Kansas legislators down? You might think you're in a bad place, okay? But literally, less than an hour before the session, that's when they got the budget. And they didn't have time to read it. Well, you guys are funding schools more than we. We're both hurting, okay? Let's get Wyoming to send us some people, all right? How did you guys? They only meet once every 2 years, right? That's probably a good thing in Wyoming to not let them meet every year. All right. We live in an attention economy. Economies are defined by what's scarce, not by what's plentiful. What's scarce today? It's not information. It's attention. Okay? And my opportunity to have your attention is almost at a close. But when you're creating images, when you are trying to get people's attention, I tell you, every single article that you read on Facebook or the web, does it have a picture with it? Why? Because of attention. Folks, we have got to help kids become more literate in the language of the 21st century, which increasingly means media. All right? So, I don't have time for my live demo, but there are resources here, including a 21-minute step tutorial, if you'd like. And you can do this on a Chromebook as well. The app I really like is called Adobe Spark Post, and it's free, and it's available in your browser. It's also available in your App Store. Okay. So, to conclude, how are we challenging students for our future? Okay, because it's not just their future, it's our future as well. I hope that in this week of wonderful professional development in St. Mary's, you're going to get some good answers to that, of ways that you can challenge yourself and challenge your students. I want to encourage you to invite your students to create, to design, to share, to ask, to demonstrate, to document, to teach, to show, to explain, to collaborate, and to risk. And my argument is that kids are going to be able to do that more powerfully with media than they could without. So, thank you all so much, and have a great conference.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.